Chapter 6. I'm very tired. Tor reassures me I'll recover fully within a few days, but that it is to be expected that the speed purification will have taken the wind from my sails. He leaves me on the fainting couch and speaks briefly with Kanju at the door. When he comes back to me, he sits slightly further away.
"Franzel will be here shortly,"
he says, not looking at me.
"Ah,
I'm a mess of sick sweat." I cringe and nod. "Thank you," I say inanely.
"If you'd like to go back to your rooms once you're refreshed, I won't keep you,"
he says.
"But you're welcome to stay, too. For dinner. Or..."
"Or?" "Dinner sounds nice," I say. "I should see the others, but besides that and getting back to our work, there really isn't anything I need to do." Again, I press myself to be clearer, for his sake. "I'll be happy to spend more time with you tonight." He still isn't looking at me, and for a flash of a moment I wish the curse back. I want him to see my confusion, reassure me, but first I have to let him know that I need reassurance. "Tor," I say, "have I made you uncomfortable?" The lion eyes snap to me in an instant. How sweet the gratification of making myself say what I want to say.
"No,"
he says, voice strange and tight.
"Kip, no, you couldn't. Please don't think..."
I've never heard him so tongue-tied, and I dare to give him a gesture very familiar to both of us. Enough. Typically when he is bored of an unnecessary apology or obeisance. He swallows back the trailing off semi-articulate babble and blinks at me. "It's a lot to process," I offer gently.
"It is,"
he agrees, emphatic.
"I would venture it may be an adjustment for you, too."
"Perhaps, but I have not been 1,000 years without touch," I do not say aloud. Franzel arrives before I have time to summon a coherent response, and Tor waves us into a suite off the grand hallway and swirls majestically away. Franzel looks at me almost mistily. "It is good to see you restored to yourself, sir." A few hours ago, I would have argued that I was even more myself when I had no choice but to speak my secret heart, but now I just smile and thank him and let him begin to bustle around and clean me up. "Do you expect to be home tonight, sir?" he asks when I'm nearly finished dressing. "Yes?" "Excellent," he says. "We will have a bath drawn up for you, and a nightcap, and a light breakfast ready in the morning, but we will leave you to yourself unless you call for us. If you should decide to stay out, you might send word by way of the guards, if you think of it." A few hours ago, I would have told him I didn't know what he was talking about. That's not true. I can tell myself that. I can pretend ignorance, but I shouldn't lie to myself. Franzel is asking if I'll be sleeping in his Radiancy's bedchamber again tonight, and I should not just push that away. I should ask myself if I want that, because, gods, I can have it. I had wanted to touch him last night. That was not the curse or the truth serum or whatever affliction. That was me. I had wanted that. He had wanted that. And yet, when I picture presenting myself to him, when I picture taking his hand and bringing it to my mouth, and kissing up the inside of his wrist towards his elbow, when I picture the way he would look as I rucked up his sleeve, a desire so sharp and liquid it would be almost indistinguishable from pain, when I picture guiding him back onto that wide, sheltered bed, it isn't quite right. Of course, that could be 900 years of habit talking. I had told him that I never let myself know, and how obvious that seems now. Franzel is too polite, too aristo-trained, to make any comment about what I am afraid might just have been 2 or 3 minutes of numb silence. I apologize anyway. He doesn't know about the taboo, of course. No one does, not yet. So he's not imagining that. Not imagining the sun on earth, glorious and spread out across sumptuous sheets, looking down his body at me. But I am imagining that, aren't I? Franzl excuses himself. Kondru appears a moment later. Dinner, he says firmly. Did he tell you? I want to ask. But if Tor didn't tell, perhaps he doesn't want the household to know. Then I should not tell. I follow Kondru to the dining room, still a bit discombobulated, and let him seat me at the chair several feet to the right of His Radiancy's customary seat. Will you eat with us? I ask. Not tonight, Kondru says, and vanishes. Tor is a few more minutes in appearing. He's finally changed out of the morning's court costume, no doubt dampened by my soggy mess of sweat when I'd been huddling against him. Perhaps I shouldn't be thinking about huddling against him like that. We're having dinner. We're going to talk, I hope. There's time. There's plenty of time to figure out what? Whether I want to sleep in his bed tonight.
You seem to have regained your color, he says. Do you feel better?
Yes. I think so.
You'll be better still if we can get some food into you. The rituals can be...
He trails off and waves a hand.
I suppose I don't know whether this would be the same, though. Are you very tired?
He seems... odd, a little. Anxious, I would say, if it were anyone else. And why should I assume that he cannot be anxious, too? Not terribly, I sigh. I slept through what seems to have been the worst of the day. He nods. Kondru brings a rice dish and goes again as quickly as he came. I watch Tor manage with his eating sticks for a moment before I try with my silverware. We are quiet, clicking and clinking. The guards are at the door. Tor sees me eye them and waves a hand. The wall of silence springs up, distinguishable only by the way the room seems suddenly smaller. Oh, just... I sigh. I was wondering if you... if Kondru knows. Or if you mean for him to know.
That we can touch, you mean?
Tor asks, and I know him well enough to hear the slight waver in his voice.
No. He knows that I am perhaps somewhat fragile tonight, but that is all. And that wouldn't surprise him, I'm sure.
He's hard to surprise, I murmur.
He's hard to ruffle,
Tor corrects lightly.
In any case, I didn't think we should tell anyone until we had discussed it further. What it means.
He takes a sip of wine.
How we would like to proceed.
I had had a plan last night for how to touch him without touching him. I had not made a plan for this. I take a sip of wine myself, hoping to cover up my fluster, and Kondru returns with peppers with the skins roasted black, stuffed with a soft cheese, and small glasses of an ice wine that is strong enough to pair well. He slips back out of existence without comment or brow raising, and Tor tilts his glass towards me and drinks. I don't know how I would like to proceed, I admit. Only that I would. He acknowledges this with a tilt of his head, and pauses before saying,
You will understand, I hope, if I am not entirely comfortable making assumptions about what that means to you.
Of course, I say. It feels like there should be more. But I don't know how to explain Fanoa, how to explain the not-quite-rightness of what I've been imagining for the past hour. How to explain that nothing else quite seems to matter as long as we're here and together, except that's not right either. But that's... it's something, surely. To start with, I say, I would like to hold your hand again. And as if he has been waiting for that, he sets down his eating sticks and reaches for me, and I'm too far. No one is seated within arm's reach of the Emperor. Why would they be? So I stumble out of my chair and towards him, and I take his hand in both of mine and keep coming until the table is between us, and he pushes back his chair and I move around until I'm kneeling at his feet, his right hand in both of mine, his left atop the jumble of all that, and I want to set my head on his knee, but even this is almost too much for him, I think. Whether it is just too sudden, or too much skin, or me on my knees before him too much like the submission he has never wanted from me. He's trembling. He seems almost feverish. His eyes so bright.
Cup,
he says weakly. Tor, I say, making sure that I'm looking up into the lion eyes, making sure that he knows this is not surrender, trying to let him see how I am blazing for this.
You could bring your chair closer,
he says, with a thread of amusement that is not at all censure, and I do that at once, dragging my chair across the rug with a sound that will summon Kanju in an instant if we are not inside a wall of silence, and after a moment moving my plate and glasses and utensils as well. Once I have resettled, he offers his hand again, and we lace our fingers together. He's still trembling, but I can feel in his grip that he does not want me to let go. I rub my thumb along the side of his palm, and he takes in a deep, shuddering breath.
You don't usually pay attention to bodies, you said.
He offers. But I do pay attention to yours. I don't know precisely what I want, just that whatever I do... I'd been afraid, last night, that I might not have the courage, but looking at his face, holding his hand, I cannot imagine holding anything back from this. He deserves whatever I can give him. I want it with you, I finish.
Quite a pair we make,
he murmurs. He, his radiancy, my Tor...
I know precisely what I want, and it's absolutely everything, so you really cannot go wrong in your wanting.
Is it everything? I ask, feeling tender. Or is it anything? His smile is wide, but somewhat brittle at the edges.
Can it be both?
He asks, slightly sardonic.
Forgive me. Quantification has never been my forte.
I don't quite like either option, although thankfully I needn't say that to him. Everything means... everything. So much. A devouring hunger that surely I can never fulfill, the way I am with these things. And anything is so frail, so pathetic. I want him to want something. I'm sure he does. I just need him to admit it. I've never been good at seeing what it is that people want from me. Kanju swans back in and nearly drops the plates of duck, going momentarily ashen at the sight of our hands clasped together on the table, and then very pink-cheeked. Oh, he says, and I flush as well, sheepish and pleased. He sets the plates down in front of us and rearranges the dishes I have moved. Straightens the tablecloth and pauses.
I know, my dear cavalier,
Tor murmurs, looking up at Kanju through his lashes.
If we need anything, we must not hesitate to ask you.
Yes, Kanju says firmly. But also, well, no, I suppose that does cover it. Another pause. I am very happy for you, he says, and leaves.
Ruffled,
Tor whispers after a moment, and we both giggle helplessly. Luckily, Kanju had decided to pre-cut my duck as well, even though I am allowed edged implements, so we don't need to unclasp hands in order to eat. I sip at the ice wine and try to think about what I might say to pry him a little closer. When we finish eating, I manage, and then run out of words.
Yes?
He prompts. What would you like to do? He sits back, his lips curve gently.
We should go somewhere that I can put my hand in your hair properly,
he says.
If you would like that.
I'd like to not be done for the night, I say. I don't want to leave you alone. That last part wasn't quite the right thing to say. His mouth twists as if he's tasted something unpleasant.
I'm never alone, my dear Kip,
he says. I would like to continue to be with you, I correct, and his expression softens again.
I know,
he says, squeezing my fingers. We eat and drink in quiet for a while. I wonder if Kanji will bring dessert, or more wine, or if he'll just leave us to our own devices for the rest of the evening. I think about what we might do, where we might go, where we might go to be alone, aware as I am of the guards just beyond the wall of silence. His study, I suppose. Is that better? I imagine tipping him back onto the divan, pressing a knee between his legs. I imagine him with the breath driven out of him, eyes wide and trusting, reaching up to touch me, slipping a hand at my shirt.
You're thinking about something,
he murmurs. I'm trying to figure out what I want, I say, letting some of my frustration through. I've never been... I told you this, I think. I'm not like other people this way.
Kep, you don't need to want anything,
he says, so earnestly it hurts.
I don't want you to feel you need to give me something of yourself. I don't care what other people are like. I haven't held someone's hand in 1,000 years.
He doesn't understand. I want him to understand. In his study, burying my face in his neck, breathing in the smell of him, feeling his heart leaping underneath me, kissing him, licking and biting into his mouth, the noises he would make for me, oh. It would be easier if I was still cursed, but that's not what he wants. He wants me to choose disinhibition. I'm thinking about kissing you, I tell him, my throat suddenly raw as if I'm holding back tears, and he goes very still. Do you ever...
Constantly,
he interrupts, fervent.
Kip, I want it. I do. I want your mouth. I want your breath. I want to devour you.
It is everything, then, I think dizzily. Not just anything. Not here, I say, because he looks very much as if he might be about to crawl across the table. I want to be... I know it might not be. I'd like to be alone, if we can. His eyes light.
I have an idea,
he says.
Let's finish eating first.
I focus on the food. The duck is crisped on the outside, cooked in an orange glaze. It goes well with the peppers and cheese and rice. I so rarely pay attention to my meals, but I do try when I'm eating with His Radiancy. He tries to appreciate food, I know. Not quite the way he appreciates Lady Alette's craft or Kanju's work with his cosmetics, but mindful, still, that there are many people hard at work every day to try to make things that will please him. His hand in mine is just slightly sweaty. I squeeze it again and drain the last mouthful of my ice wine.
Shall I have Kanji bring us something chocolate for dessert?
He asks. I shake my head, sheepish that he clearly knows of my love for sweet things, and he smiles and stands, keeping my hand securely in his. He leads me back to his bedchamber, guards a respectful distance behind us. The extra bed and the fainting couch had been cleared away.
So,
he says, waving the wall of silence back into place around us.
Years ago, I decided I wanted to explore the passageways with Rodin. We put it around that I was working a great magic and not to be disturbed, set up an illusion that I was pacing on the balcony, and snuck off for the day while the guards watched over my illusory self.
I'm gaping, just a little. I love this. The idea of His Radiancy sneaking away and doing what he wished for a day. Just a day. But you were with a guard, then, I manage. Surely Rodin counts for 2 guards, especially in passageways that no one else knows about.
There are guards in your apartments,
Tor points out. Oh. Because now I'm picturing Tor, bared and spread across my sheets, in my bed, and... Yes. Tor is looking at my face rapturously, as if he's drinking me in.
Yes,
he says, and I swallow hard and nod. He grins, dazzling.
an adventure,
he pronounces, and I love him so much. I want to give him everything. I want him to be free. I want to be free with him. What is your plan? I ask.
We have both had trying days,
he says.
It's not unreasonable to think we might retire early. Kanji will need to get me ready, and then I will set the illusion. But why don't you go back to your apartment, then meet me in the passageways?
Excellent, I say, and lift his hand to my mouth, brushing my lips across his knuckles. He catches his breath.
Cap,
he says, and I am sure he is flushed, for all that I can't distinguish it. Tor, I murmur, and bow, and leave him. Gaudi is in my sitting room, and I can't begrudge him that. The last he'd seen me, I had been very ill. Tor will be a half an hour at least in changing. I'm in no rush. I tell myself all of this quite firmly. Uncle Kip, he says, and I open my arms for the embrace he clearly isn't sure if he should ask for. I hug him fiercely. Are you angry with me? He asks.
For what? I ask.
Saving my life. I know you didn't want Tanaea involved, Gaudi says. Tor says it was wild magic. I see his little twitch and grin at him. His radiancy, that is. I'm not angry, Gaudi. She's magnificent, and she was able to... Well, I'm good as new. Or slightly better. But he doesn't need to know that. Not yet. Not until I have words for it. I do have words for it. One word, in particular. But, just as Tor had needed to be sure my interest in him was not driven by the curse, I should be sure he understands all of what Fanoa means. Franzel brings the promised nightcap, with an extra for Gaudi, and we toast my health, and then I remember that he hasn't slept and send him off to his own rooms. Toro will be in his nightclothes. I suppose I should be, too. I change. I wash my hands, my face, clean my mouth. As promised, my staff leave me blessedly alone. I consider my bath, but I have neither the patience nor quite the audacity to risk his radiancy finding me thus. Instead, with nothing to do but wait, I slip into the passageways. I expect him to be some time yet, but my torchlight is joined by golden mage light before I've even made it out to the main stairwell, and my lord of rising stars appears just behind the bobbing light, dressed as resplendently as ever in a flowing white nightgown, practically dancing towards me.
You are quicker than I expected,
I tell him, afraid I may not be hiding my startlement. I thought I would have some time alone with my thoughts, but perhaps it's better I don't.
I can be efficient when properly motivated, my lord Madang,
he says, clasping my hands as if it is easy and natural already. And gods, it is. And stepping in close.
I admit I can't recall when I was last so excited for a new adventure.
Navikiani, I suggest.
After, he says. When we got back, and you moved in, and I realized I could come to see you. Just because I wanted to.
His eyes are bright and so warm.
Kep,
he says, and I realize that he's about to ask, and that I don't want him to ask. I don't want him to need to ask. I lift my palm to his cheek and guide us together, reeling him in, reaching up, pressing my lips to his. He makes a soft, startled noise, and then sighs into my mouth and lets go of me to push both of his hands into my hair. I let myself fall back into the place of disinhibition, back into feeling and not being able to stop. I hold all of his fire and all of mine between both hands, stroke my fingers down his throat and his body, take hold of his hips, carefully, carefully, and push him until his back is against the cool stone wall. He groans, shivers. I'm not used to kissing someone taller than me, narrower than me. It is strange. It occurs to me in a dizzy rush of breath between kisses that if I set him on his back, it won't matter how tall we are. I want to make him feel good. I want to lay him out and touch him, to help try to erase the memory of 1,000 years alone in his skin, just for a moment, to help him know that he never needs to be alone again. As lovely as it is to feel him this way, I'm not particularly keen to go further in these dark stone hallways when my bedroom is barely a minute away. Here, I gasp nonsensically the next time we part for breath. Come with me. And he obeys easily, sliding his hand into mine, nudging the mage light ahead of us. Let me make sure it's clear, I whisper, and leave him for just a moment, feeling every bit as if we're a pair of skulking teenagers instead of the lords of our world. The hall is empty. I fetch Tor, sneak him into my bedroom, and then half collapse into laughter again once the door is shut behind us. Tor makes a few gestures, extinguishing the unnecessary mage light, putting up a wall of silence, perhaps. He looks coy, adventurous, distinctly so, although by all rights he shouldn't in that gown. It's many layers delicate, diaphanous.
I haven't been in here since you made it your own, he says.
Feel free to look around, I say, instead of telling him that no one has, except my household. And Vinyay, once. And perhaps Birotovo. He smiles again, and examines my carving of the Western Ring, my incense stand, trails his fingers around the rim of a glass of fresh water on my bedside table. I try not to fiddle with the hems of my sleeves. My sleep tunic is cream linen, laced at the neck, and with billowing sleeves. I often run my fingers along the edges when I find sleep elusive. Perhaps someday I will think to ask Fanny to embroider some patterns there, something to keep my attention, like meditation beads. I have drifted, distracted. Tor is done with the circuit of the room and is standing still, looking at me, his eyes full of an affection both quiet and deep. I have not invited him to sit. There's only one chair in the room, my reading chair, one of the old wicker pieces brought from my last apartment.
Was this what you had in mind?
He asks.
When you said you'd like to be alone together.
By this, I say, do you mean taking you to bed? He takes in a sharp, beautiful breath and doesn't answer. I hesitate. Variations on this theme, yes. I step towards him, take his hand as if we're about to dance, and then pull him into an embrace. Holding you, I murmur into his shoulder. Touching you. Kissing you. Undressing you. I'm not particular.
You said you don't. You haven't.
He says. He's holding me, too. His arm tucked around me. Palm flat against my upper back.
With men.
No, I agree. Am I right to think that you have?
Yes,
he murmurs.
But not for a lifetime, really. It feels more like something I read in a book than like actual memories.
He sounds sad, and I think again if it's Rangersal, locked away somewhere, close and yet an insurmountable distance. We'll free him, I think, but I know that isn't what Tor needs to hear right now. I can try to remind you, I say. Wake you up to yourself, as you said last night.
If you'd like,
he whispers.
But if if it becomes too much, you can tell me. I won't be upset. No, I mean, thank you. Yes, but I don't think that will be necessary. As long as we move slowly. I meant, I want to be absolutely clear, my dear. Everything you've said so far, last night and now, has been about you touching me. Will you allow me to touch you, too?
I imagine Tor's long fingers exploring my shaft and nearly gasp with the intensity of feeling that washes over me with the image. I'm sure that I jolt, and I bury my burning face deeper in his neck and nod, shaky.
He laughs a little, low and pleased.
Good,
he whispers, and pulls back, taking my face between his hands and kissing me again. He does not kiss like someone who has not touched anyone in 1,000 years. That's not entirely fair to say. In a way, he does. In the way he kisses thoroughly, desperately, hungrily, as if he's afraid it might be snatched away at any moment. But I might have expected slow, careful, exploring kisses. I might have expected some clumsiness, some remembering to breathe. If I had thought enough to expect things, that is. I would not have expected such mastery, such style. I should have known better.
Tell me what you want,
he breathes, breaking away again, and for a moment all I can think is this, but then I remember. I'll show you, I tell him. I lift his hand to my mouth again, turn it over and kiss the inside of his wrist where his pulse is strong and alive, and slip my fingers up his sleeve.
Oh,
he gasps as I slide up his arm, mouthing along upwards, pushing the fabric as I go. His skin is hot, and when I reach the crook of his elbow, I dare to taste. It tastes like skin, clean and simple, just a hint of salt, perhaps a slight floral undercurrent. I need to stop imagining things, I think. The reality is better. It's real, and it's right here, and I want to know.
Cap,
his radiancy whispers, and gods, I will never tire of hearing him say my name like that, breathy and odd and pleading. Right here, I murmur, and switch to his other arm, mouthing and suckling my way up to his bicep. When I finish there, I can feel that his knees are watery in the way he leans into me, and I walk him backwards to the bed. I kick off my house slippers. He, I realize, is barefoot already. Sit for me, I say, and once he is sitting, I kneel and lift one high-arched foot onto my knee. I move slowly, trace just the tips of my fingers up along the outside of his ankle, lifting the hem of his gown to his knee. I kiss the front of his knee, the skin absurdly soft, and look up at him, and he's still all of that, soft and breathless, but there's a shadow of something else around his eyes, and it doesn't ease when I pause. Tell me, I say.
It's good. It's, Kip, I like it. I do. But,
I say, careful, measured. He says, and swallows.
I don't want you on your knees.
Oh, of course. He doesn't want me to serve him here. I say, and rise to my feet so that he's looking up at me. I step in, putting one thigh between his legs, not quite close enough to feel the heat of his core, or his excitement, which I'm starting to match, but close enough to put my hands on his shoulders and pull his face forwards into my chest and belly. He wraps both arms around me and presses his nose into the soft skin beneath my ribcage and breathes deeply.
Thank you,
he says, muffled by the folds of linen.
Will you lie down with me?
If I was still under the influence of the curse, I would tell him I was trying to take his clothes off, but I suppose that can come later. I unfold myself from him, and he settles on one side, facing me. I mirror him and try not to think too much as he leans in to capture my lips again. I can't help but think Fanoa, though. Our two selves, cupped together, his knees knocking against mine. Yes, this is better. I reach for him, press a hand over his heart, and rub along the underside of his breast. My thumb catches a nipple. I'm used to them being higher, and he breathes in sharply and tilts his head back slightly in clear pleasure. His hand flutters and finds my hip, clutching. Good? I ask, even as the curve of my mouth tells him I know the answer.
So good, Kip, so good to be touched, so glad that it's you.
I trace the underside of his nipple, intentionally this time, back and forth several times. It occurs to me in a wave that right now, dressed as we are, his head tipped back, we could have done this before. We could have done this 900 years ago. Me too, I tell him, and dip back into my own disinhibition, into being honest with him and with myself. I didn't know, but I can see now how long I've been waiting for this.
Tell me, Tor asks.
I had told Ludwig this, although I'd barely known it until I'd said it out loud. The sandbar, I say, and then the moon lady so soon after. I wanted you to be able to feel, to let yourself be awake. I kiss him, soft percussion, a necessary break as I work myself up to say, I wanted you to be able to come. Tor whimpers and buries his face in my neck.
Cap, he moans. I want to, please, and I want to see you. I want to know.
You know me, I tell him, setting my hand on the back of his head. No one knows me like you do, Tor.
Want to know what you feel like in my hands, in my mouth.
He mumbles, lips pressed against my throat, and I go hot and cold and hot again in quick succession. Oh, I say, and think, and feel. Oh. Oh.
Unless you don't.
He starts, pulling back to fix wide golden eyes on my face. No, I shake my head at him dumbly. I hadn't gotten as far as imagining how you might want to touch me, I admit. But yes, I want. Yes, that. I swallow hard. You, however you want. I'm. Anything that feels good for you, I'll love it.
Want your skin,
Tor says, squirming in closer to me. I can feel the heat of his groin, although he doesn't push in close enough for us to touch there.
Can I?
Yes, I say, not knowing what he means, but knowing in that moment that there is nothing he could be asking to which I would give any other answer. He shifts, sits upright, and when I join him, sets his hands on my shoulders, drags them down to my waist, and then slides beneath the hem and pushes back up, moving the fabric as he goes, across my belly and chest, his hands, sliding up to my shoulders, guiding me to lift my arms and then tugging it over my head. He tosses it aside carelessly and looks at my bared chest as if I'm a marvel, a carven thing. I have never thought so, but if he thinks I am, then I am. You too? I ask. His right hand sweeps down the center of my chest. His nails are long. He's wearing a pale gold lacquer. I follow the glimmer and find myself mesmerized by the way his skin looks against mine.
Be patient for me, my Lord Madang.
His left hand rests on my upper arm and squeezes a gentle reassurance.
All in good time.
His right hand falls another span of inches and settles on the clasp of my soft sleep pants. I bite back a groan. He's very close to touching me, albeit through layers of fabric. He grins, crooked and delightfully bashful.
Yes?
He asks. Yes, I agree, and he turns so that the back of his hand is resting just below my navel and strokes down. His fingers flutter closed, and he draws in the kind of shuddering breath I would expect if I were touching him.
Oh, yes,
he whispers and bites his lip.
Oh, Kip, yes, gods, let me.
He turns his hand back so the palm is facing me, cupping gently. I'm having trouble even thinking the words. Tor is holding, stroking my prick, gentle and so deliberate, looking back and forth between it and my face. His other hand goes for the clasp. He's trembling enough to make it difficult, and after a moment he glances at me pleadingly and I help. I lift my hips to slide the pants down, and he tucks his fingers into my undergarments, these too, and I wriggle my way out of them both with very little dignity, and then I'm naked, and he is not, and this is so tremendously unfair. please? I ask as he tosses those two to the side, out of the scope of my attention, away.
Please?
He breathes, pushing me onto my back on the bed and sitting on his heels between my legs. His long fingers hover over me. I'm twitching, aching, so hard. I want to see you, I whisper, feeling strange and vulnerable. Tor, please. And how long has it been since I begged anyone in bed? He shucks the many layers of his nightgown. There's nothing beneath them. Nothing but him. His body. His firm, lean torso. His bountiful ocean of gleaming skin. The sharp jut of hips and collarbones. His hardness. He smiles down at me, wrinkles around his eyes, and touches me again. Light, although not quite tentative, and I groan between my teeth, head falling back into my pillows. After a moment, his slow attention shifts lower. His long fingers stroke the insides of my thighs, and I find myself again and reach for him in return. The curve of his cheek. I push myself up onto my elbow to get nearer to him, to feel down his throat and neck. He hums a long note of contentment, but then slides back beyond my reach and presses his mouth to my thigh. He uses his hands to touch my legs, exploring carefully down my calves, then touching my feet, pressing a firm kiss to one of the scars on the inside arch of my right foot.
Have I mentioned how magnificent you were?
He murmurs. It takes my touch-fragmented brain a moment to connect his reverent touch to the greater dance.
I knew you enjoyed it,
I tell him.
You didn't know how much.
His smile is toothy and feral, and he prowls back up to my thighs and revisits them with the attention of fingertips. No, I agree quietly.
I touched myself,
he says, a confession whose scope is clarified with a gesture encompassing his erection.
I could not stop touching myself.
Did you imagine me touching you? He hesitates, searching my face, and then nods, retreating into a sort of shyness that is at once endearing and quite nearly infuriating. He should not be hesitant. He needs to know. I touched myself after the moon, I say. I didn't think of touching you, or you touching me, but I did think of you touching yourself. I breathe.
I could touch myself for you,
he says, graveled. Later, I tell him. Right now I want to be touching you. He shivers, dropping a fist into the bedding as if to steady himself. I sit up again to take his shoulders and tug him close enough to kiss. I run a hand over the smoothness of his head, and I'm close enough to feel a slight... something. Displeasure, I think. I drop back to his shoulder.
No,
he says, grabbing my hand and bringing it back to the back of his head.
Not bad. Just for a moment, I...
He pulls back to look me in the eye, and there is wryness there alongside sadness.
I missed my hair.
I've never imagined him with hair. Or, Kanji had given me a lecture, once, about depilatory creams, and I suppose I must then have given some perfunctory thought to the idea, but I've never imagined him wanting hair. I'm sorry, I tell him, and stroke the nape of his neck. Gentle.
No, it's good,
he says.
It means I'm remembering how to be...
A gusty sigh.
How to be a person again.
He looks back up, wry again.
I'm sorry. We're talking about touching.
We were doing more than talking, I say automatically, before I can stop myself.
I love it when you do that,
he says.
What? Blush,
he says, and leans forward to kiss my cheekbone. I flush even more fiercely.
It's terribly becoming.
He sets his forehead against mine, shifts to clasp the back of my neck, and we breathe together for a moment.
Cap,
he says quietly.
I thought, I was so afraid of losing you. I need...
You can have it, I tell him when he can't seem to find the words. Whatever you need, Tor, I want you to have it. I want him to take it. I want him to know that it's his. And he sees something of that, I think, because his eyes gleam and he moves again, strokes through my hair again, and then sets a hand on my cock, the way one might on a game piece whose possible moves one is considering.
Need to see you, he murmurs. Lie back for me.
I don't want to stop being able to touch and kiss him, but I need to give him what he needs, so I obey silently. He gleams at me again, adjusts himself to comfort between my spread legs, and palms my cockhead consideringly, then turns to look at the damp smear across his palm and licks it. His eyes flutter shut, and he gives a soft sigh of such clear contentment that I ache. There might possibly be other reasons that I ache, but that is at least one of them. I know, mostly from literature and body jokes, that men with more appetite than I have typically keep some kind of oil or slick at their bedside, but Tor doesn't seem to mind the lack. He takes me firmly in one hand, pressing my hip down with the other, and strokes up the length of my shaft. I feel feverish with heat, his hand cool in contrast to my insistent anatomy, but as he sets a pace he warms to me, and leans in over me, eyes darting from my face to my prick and back, and breathes on me. Oh, gods!
I want,
he croaks, and I stifle a whine. Anything, I say.
Can I?
Yes.
Can I have you in my mouth, Kip, or?
Yes, Tor. But he still doesn't dip forward, watching my face as his hand moves on me, and after a quiet eternity I manage. Anything. I trust you. Please. The please is what does it, without question. He exhales a half laugh and bends to press his lips above his thumb, to the tight skin along the underside of my glands, and I watch as his self-consciousness falls away, as he falls into my body and mouths down my shaft, shifting his hand to make way for lips and then tongue. I groan, fumbling for his cheek, but he dodges me and noses at my stones, breathing hot and quick on every inch of heated skin. Then he shifts again, looks up at me with his burning effervoa eyes, takes the base of my cock in his hand and the head between his lips, and sucks gently, a soft, wet nursing on the most intimate part of myself. I cry out this time, utterly helpless against the onslaught of feeling. It's so much with him. I feel as if I might understand something of what he must feel, the baffled hypersensitivity, every nerve leaping with the slightest shift of fingers. So aware, so awake. He hums encouragement and takes me in further, and this time when I reach for him, my hand finds his jaw. My thumb brushes across the edge of his lip, and then I feel myself through the soft swell of his cheek. I'm incoherent, but when, between his confident strokes, I'm able to focus on him, I can see that he is something beyond even that. Feverish. Golden, lavishing me with attention and reveling in it so obviously that I cannot find space to feel awed or guilty or confused. This is what he wants, and it's so good, the way he moves, the way he moves me, the way he's taking me deep and strong. It's not until I feel myself starting to crest that I have any space in my head for thought. Oh, I manage. Tor, I... He hums around me again, swallows me deep and keeps moving, but I shake my head. I don't... I pant. I don't want to... Oh, fuck. Tor, wait. He pulls off of me with an expression of mingled disapproval and expectation of a reasonable explanation forthcoming. Entirely familiar, but not from between my legs. I'm not a young man, I pant. And if I finish now, I'll be useless for a while, and I don't want to be. I'm not done with you. He inhales, wipes his lips, and nods. How would you like to proceed? I ask.
Together, he pleads, and then clarifies. I want to come together as best we can, which rather narrows our options, I think.
He crawls up my body and settles himself against me, in the cradle of my arms and legs.
Later, I want to know what it feels like to have you buried in me,
moving in me, he says, looking into my mouth between phrases.
But I think, for now, we might be better served by something less involved.
My cock is pressed against his belly. There's no way he could miss how I twitch at that idea. He looks up at me, eyes hooded. I nod and try to swallow to dispel the terrible dryness of my mouth. I gesture for him to come a few inches further, higher, to settle more intimately against me. He sets one hand on either side of my hips, then walks himself the last few inches up my body, weight resting on his fingertips, until he's sliding into the crease of my leg and groin, and his breath is against my cheek, and his eyes are bright and hot and close. He shifts his weight to one side and pushes my hair from my face, tucks strands behind my ears. I lift my own hands to his waist. Good, I whisper. He sighs and pushes himself against the inside of my thigh somewhat emphatically, and I guide him to do it again. His cock is wet at the tip, but not enough for a slick, steady slide. He drags against me, and I shift to bring us together, and he gasps raggedly, half dropping forward onto me.
Cap,
he says weakly, and I hook my thumb around my shaft and my fingers around his and pull slowly upwards.
Wait,
he breathes when I am just past halfway, and sets his forehead to my shoulder to pant for a moment. I stay frozen as I am for a moment, and then release us gently, reaching around instead to draw my fingers up along the base of his spine. Too much? I ask.
He says. Just strange. Good, but
it's all right, I reassure him. Can we switch places?
Oh, please,
he says, eyes snapping to mine sudden and wild, and for a moment we scramble to gather ourselves and adjust. I roll to my side, tip him onto his back, and push myself in beneath the stones, nudging upwards. He whines loudly, and doesn't stop when I drop to take one of his nipples in my mouth. It isn't quite like anything I've done before, the bud smaller and harder than any of my female lovers, but so delicate. I start to brush the other with the pat of my thumb, and within a minute or two he's rutting up against me. He sounds so good. He sounds like bliss, and when I switch to mouth at his other breast and gently pinch the first, I think for a moment I might have pushed too quickly. He spasms against me and gasps, but there's no rush of wetness, and when I ease back and look at him, he looks far from finished. I reach down again to grasp us both, and he rocks up into my hands insistently, his light and my fire pooling together. With his body beneath mine like this, with him writhing and moaning and hiding his face in the crook of one arm, I can imagine what it might be like to take him entirely, to put myself inside of him and bring him home. I want to anchor him with my own body, to show him a place in the world where he need be nothing but mine. I wish I found it easier to put all of that into words spoken out loud, without the medium of curse or serum. Yes, I whisper, thumbing over our cockheads. Tor, you feel incredible. He holds my arms, rocks up against me, sucking in air through his teeth. So good, I tell him. I've never been skilled at bed talk, but I think it will be better to be clumsy than silent. You're so hard for me, I murmur.
I've come thinking about you more times than I can count,
he says.
Your hands and your legs and your mouth and your cock, Kip, gods,
His voice cracks, fingers tightening on my biceps.
I'm so close,
he says, and then shakily,
tell me when you're close. I want to come with you.
I withdraw to run my fingertip back and forth in his slit, gathering a few more drops of wetness, then return to holding us both, stroking us together. His pupils are wide, the muscles of his neck standing out as he keeps his head still, eyes on me, when I would wager he wants desperately to throw it back and thrash. He's needed this for so long.
Kip,
he says, tight.
Kip, please,
I move against him, thrust and stroke and fuck, and he comes beautifully, helplessly, shuddering all over, his body going tight and then liquid loose, spilling between us, on his belly, on my hands, coming, and I fall into my own crisis so abruptly that I half collapse on him, still jerking us together in the narrow space between our bodies to drain the last of it, setting my face in his neck and muffling the noises of my passion there. Giving them to him. They're his. I let go when he starts to twitch, pulling back to rest against his thigh, but I keep myself nuzzled into him, and he wraps his arms around me and holds me so tightly, and I'm safe like this, so safe and so sure. After a while, when our bodies and our sweat have cooled, I move enough to pull sheets and blankets over our legs. Tor mumbles something and pulls me back into his embrace, clutching. "Mm-hmm," I say, and he shakes his head, face hidden against my chest. "Tor?" He extracts himself enough to meet my gaze. He looks sad again, and my breath catches. "I said, I want this to be real," he says. "What?" I go cold. "Don't say that. It is real."
"It is,"
he agrees, and captures my mouth for a soft kiss.
"But I'm not... I can't... I want to have it."
"Can't we?"
"I can't sneak away and sleep in your bed every night."
He's so sad, and I can scarcely breathe. I turn to my side, the better to hold him. "Not every night," I agree. "I suppose it would be easier for me to sleep in yours." But I'm imagining the watchful guards, and he twitches away, whether at the idea or the hesitance with which I present it.
"I won't let there be any question of your legitimacy,"
he says stiffly. "When I go," he means. "Listen to me," I tell him. "Right now we're here, and we're together. We can figure out tomorrow. He sighs.
"You're right,"
he says.
"You're always right. I'm sorry, Kip."
"I meant what I said the other day," I tell him. "You're allowed to feel what you feel, but neither of us is best suited for problem solving right now."
"No, indeed,"
he says, almost a purr.
"Sticky and naked in a bed with Kip Madang, I am certainly best suited for other things."
"Oh?
I'm not so young anymore myself, but I'll be able to make love to you again at least once more before dawn, I think."
Something about that, about my dear Lord saying those words, "make love to you again," it's a tender place inside of me, and I press down against the sudden lump in my throat. "Sticky," I say stupidly. "Here's a bath. It's kept warm by magic. Very convenient when I get caught up in the evenings."
"Big enough for two?"
"It isn't anything like the Imperial baths, but it is large enough for two. We wash ourselves separately, but then settle in the warmth together, stretching and lazing, my arm around his back, his head resting against mine. It occurs to me after half an hour or so that the bath probably isn't properly purified, but he doesn't seem to care, so I am certainly not going to mention it."
"Kip?"
he murmurs.
"Yes? Hold me."
My heart jumps. I hope he can feel it. "Gladly," I say, and adjust so that he is sitting between my legs, lying back against my chest. I rub my hand up and down his arm. With the other, I gently massage his shoulder, neck, scalp, rubbing around one ear. He sighs and leans into me, splashing slightly and then stilling again.
"I feel good with you,"
he says quietly.
"Like my body is my body."
"Good," I say. And then, "I like touching you. I'm so glad I can. I was looking forward to it. Although I didn't think..." I'm blushing again. "I was looking forward to... I thought perhaps holding your hand. Embracing you."
"With clothes on,"
he says. I brush against the side of his face again with my fingertips, reassuring myself that he's smiling. I'm still looking forward to holding your hand, I tell him, as often as I can. He moves to set our hands together, weaving his fingers up through mine.
My dear Cap,
he whispers,
tell me what else you're looking forward to.
Seeing you happy, I say immediately. Seeing you as yourself. Kanju's arranging for us to take lunch together more often. And before too long, we'll be traveling.
Skyships are better with you,
he mumbles. Yes, I agree. And after that...
No,
he interrupts.
That is, I was thinking of a more narrow thing of what you're looking forward to.
He shifts back against me, pressing his backside against my mostly quiescent cock, and I pause, aflame with embarrassment. Thank you, I tell him. I'm very bad at understanding innuendo, in general. Not just with you, although 900 years of practice in talking about almost everything except sex might make that not quite true.
I think I'm not particularly good at introducing it myself. So we'll just have to muddle through and try to be clear with each other.
Yes. But there's so little in my head right now. What am I looking forward to? Touching him. Making him come. I'm not at all particular about the means. You mentioned... I push my hips forward slightly, and he gives a quiet sound of acknowledgement. Taking me inside you, I venture. It seems as if you meant not just your mouth.
It's not like you to be coy, my lord madame,
he rumbles. Tonight is the extent of my experience in finding pleasure with any male-bodied person, I say.
Ah,
he says, and brings our clasped hands up to his mouth, kissing my knuckles.
Easy to forget. You handled me quite masterfully.
I'm willing to learn, I say.
I've no doubt of that,
he answers.
Meanwhile, I think you are well enough aware of human anatomy to guess what I meant.
Yes, I say. And yes, if that's something that you would enjoy. And if you're willing to be patient with me while I learn to make it good for you. He gives a little huff, as if indignant.
It's you,
he says.
It will be good for me.
There aren't really particular things I'm looking forward to, I say. Just being with you, learning you in new ways, lying in bed and talking to you. I wish I could see his face, gauge if he is disappointed by this, but perhaps it's better not to. Safer, more cowardly. But if there are acts that you are eager for in particular, I'm interested in hearing about them.
Pleasuring you to climax with my mouth,
he says.
And absolutely any way you are willing to penetrate me will be a luxury. I haven't had anything inside since before I became emperor. Cods, implements or fingers, or your beautiful thick cock.
He sighs, and I feel the shimmering tension of his body between my legs.
And, like you said,
he adds,
lying abed after, curled together and whispering to each other, kissing your face and mouth and your shoulders.
He shivers slightly. His prick is stiffening again, rising. I can see it in my periphery, but moreover, I can feel his body, the arousal coiling through it. Would you like to touch yourself for me? I ask him. I want to see you. He gives a guttural groan and goes to take himself in hand, but his movements are slow, as if he's trying to avoid splashing. I watch over his shoulder as he wraps his fingers around his shaft and pulls. You're so beautiful, Tor, I tell him. I love seeing your body as it's meant to be. He whimpers, thumb and forefinger circling just beneath the jutting head of his cock. I love that you're hard for me, I say. I love that you're here, with me, in my arms, touching yourself. You deserve it. Let yourself have it, won't you?
Yes,
he gasps.
I will. Kip. I am. Kip. Kip. Fuck. We're not young men, but he has been 1,000 years without owning and embracing the pleasure of his body, and he's on the knife's edge within a minute. I hold him against me, and when his movements grow frantic and uneven, I let my fingertips skim the base of his prick, and he starts to spill immediately, thrashing for a moment against me, and then going limp and weak and still.
Oh,
he groans, and half turns to snuggle against me, wrapping an arm around my shoulder. We extract ourselves and towel off. He's awkward about it, and I realize he has not been allowed to dry himself for 1,000 years, and then retreat wordlessly to my bed. I tuck us in together and turn my body to his, drape an arm over his hip, and push a kiss to his soft, still lips.
I can't fall asleep, he murmurs. I need to be back before dawn.
He pauses.
Conjure will know anyway.
He adds. Ah, that is... I suppose I should have realized that. It doesn't bother me for my own sake, and Tor doesn't seem overly perturbed, so I shrug and kiss him again, this time in consolation. He'll tell Ludwig and Roden, I say. That's not the worst thing. They'll help us figure out logistics, how to manage this, safely, discreetly. He lifts his head, and his eyes light on mine.
I thought you would be bothered,
he says. I don't have any sense of shame about sex, I say.
What about the rest of it?
His hand finds my collarbone, tracing back and forth, skipping easily of the cord of my felico.
About being Fanoa.
It takes me a moment to find my tongue. They know, I tell him. Roden and Ludwig, certainly. And even if they didn't, I'd want them to know. They're our friends. I should explain better, but I'm still reeling at the way the word fit in his lips. Fanoa is a legal relationship in the wide seas. Not entirely unlike a marriage.
Aurelius Magnus and Eleonora of Isauria.
Aurelius never married. His children had been by his consort, Tassikar the Magnificent. And of course, when he disappeared, it had been Eleonora who had gone after him, sailed out of the world for him. Precisely, I say. I understand that you may not wish for us to claim it publicly, but that doesn't bother me. For now. But I have no hesitations.
It won't be long, in the grand scheme of things,
he says, and that drives us both to silence for a while. I wonder. Do you think much about... after, I say.
I try not to,
he says.
More about my quest.
He says the word with careful relish, and turns his face into my chest. Finding his friends, I think, and that spurs me on to the next thought, like one bead following another on a string. I'm glad to know that you had a life before the palace, I say. Adventures of your own. Friends. Lovers. Other than the moon lady. He doesn't answer that, other than a quiet sigh against my breast. I suppose having had a life before made it that much harder to be emperor. I spent the night before my coronation praying for the Red Company to come take me away, he had told us once. I'm glad for you to have the chance to find them again, I try again, and he lifts his head back to look at me.
But when I lie by my campfire at night, I'll think of this,
he tells me,
about what it feels like to be tangled up in you.
The feeling wells up in my chest again, and I breathe as steadily as I can, trying to hold back the pinpricks of heat dampening my eyes, swallowing down the thick rippling ache of my throat. His mouth curves in a sad smile, and I must not be as successful in hiding the wave of emotion as I'd like, because he touches the corner of my eye with careful fingers and brushes the wetness down my cheek.
Cap,
he murmurs. I am glad, I insist, and he nods.
I know,
he says.
You love me. You want me to go because you understand that I must. I know. But it isn't that simple, and it doesn't have to be. It isn't for me, either.
He kisses my fingers again.
But for now, we have time. We have months yet, and I intend to make as much of them as we can.
He presses his lips to my breast next, slow and reverent.
I have much to learn, too,
he murmurs.
It is one thing to know how to make love, but to know how to make love to you.
He presses his thumb beneath my nipple and dips his head to take it in his mouth. One knee has worked its way between my thighs. I'm not hard again. Not yet, in any case. But the friction will not hurt if I move in that direction.
Tell me about your body,
he says between soft suckles. My... All right, I say. I'm not often very aware of my body, except when I'm dancing. I dance in the mornings. This isn't what he meant. I'm not particular about my pleasure, I tell him. I like... Yes, that, as he looks hard at the firm point of my nipple. And I like to give pleasure. I have been told that my training in pearl diving comes in very handy.
Aha,
he says, stroking down to my belly, feeling across my abdomen to grip my sides like handles as he pushes me onto my back and switches to latch onto my other breast.
Duly noted.
I like to use my hands, too, I say. Not that I don't like to use my prick, but I don't think the worlds revolve around it. That had been Susan's observation. She had appreciated my flexibility when her body had made traditional intercourse difficult for her.
Is there,
he asks, in delicious pants of breath,
anywhere you prefer not to be touched?
Backs of my knees are sensitive, I say, and I prefer not to be entered without warning. He lifts his head, brows up in surprise.
Of course not,
he says, indignant. I laugh. You? I ask, and take a nipple between my fingertips. I gather we are of the same mind about this.
Yes,
he says.
But as for anything else, I think we may need to find out together. I seem to be very fond of your hands absolutely anywhere, so far. Your mouth, too, although it is somewhat more quickly overwhelming.
He looks briefly shy, nearly demure.
I quite enjoyed the feeling of your weight atop me. It was grounding.
I just like to be able to touch you, I say, and he beams in the dim light.
Now that we're here,
he says, low,
it's hard to imagine wanting anything else.
Just your freedom, I say.
No, that's what I meant,
he answers, slotting back in beside me.
It feels as though my curse was broken today. The rest of what I've longed for seems petty next to the feeling of your skin against mine, my dear.
He stretches, long and languorous.
My Fanoa,
he whispers, and I nearly burst with feeling. Fanoa, I echo, and we explore, together, the planes of each other's faces, with hands and lips, slow and soothing, until I find myself adrift. He kisses one eyelid, then the other.
Sleep, my love,
he murmurs, and I do. When I wake, sometime in the nebulous before dawn, I'm alone in my bed. My first inclination is to panic. How could I have slept? How could I have squandered even a moment of holding my dear lord in my arms, in my bed? How could I have missed? The door to my dressing room is ajar, and there's a soft humming from within it. My juddering heart eases. I recognize the tune, as rarely as I have ever heard him hum. And the tune, too. That same familiar, unfamiliar song he had been playing in the study. The same thing he had sung for me as the curse and the last of the purifications had racked my body. It sounds like Aurora, but it is not from Aurora. Or I suppose. No part I ever heard. Perhaps there is more to it. Tor might have heard it from Fitzroy Ingersoll, some evening at the fireside. I slide my bare legs from under the sheets, wrap myself in the dressing robe hanging on the door, and peer into the closet. Tor is redressed in his nightgown, but over the top he has draped a scarlet mantle, not one of my black-robed imperial secretary numbers, but something in a richer hue. One of the pieces he had chosen for me, that day with Lady Alette. I have worn it on occasion, to see a play in the city with Conju, I think, but it always draws attention. It is so bold, and I lean in the doorway and cannot help but smile as he fiddles with the clasp, admiring himself in the mirror and draping it over his shoulders this way and that. "I never see you in red," I tell him when I'm finished admiring him unseen, and he swirls and beams at me. "It suits you."
"Good morning,"
he says, and makes an absurd flourish, as if the mantle is a cape.
"It's my favorite color."
"Of course it is," I think. I knew that, somehow. How did I... Oh. Oh. I take in a startled breath. His eyelids flutter, and he sees me see him. And he opens his mouth to say something, and then pauses, visibly uncertain. The air between us is soft, waiting. "Hello," he says quietly. "Hello," I breathe, and close the space between us in three steps, crashing against him, taking him in my arms. He wraps around me in return, not clutching as I am, but not uncertain, either. "Fitzroy," I say, wobbling, and pull back to look him in the eye, just for a moment, just for long enough to see how very much he needs me to be holding him right now. I pull him back in, tight and sure, and then rock slightly as if we're dancing, and then I let us sink to the floor. "Fitzroy," I say again, and he sobs against my neck.
"I didn't know,"
he says after some time, when he has the breath for words.
"I don't know if I really am, anymore. I don't know if I can be him, if I ever was."
I want to tell him that he's wrong. I want to tell him he doesn't have to choose. He can be Fitzroy and Tor. Already the two halves fit together to form a picture of a man I recognize. But for now, I don't think that is what he needs to hear. For now, I hold him, and rock him, and let him cry. And call him beloved. "How much longer?" I ask, when I've coaxed him back to sit on my bed. In the nightgown and the red mantle, he looks strange. Delicate, disjointed, beautiful and himself, but not entirely whole.
"Quarter bell,"
he says. 15 minutes. The wall of silence is still holding out the sounds of the rest of the world. But I can smell coffee. I see him breathe in the scent, and his lips twitch.
"Go on,"
he says, amused. "Shall I bring you a cup?"
"Oh."
His eyes brighten.
"Yes, please, my dear. As long as you don't mind needing to ritually destroy a cup for me."
"I have one of yours," I admit. "Conju made sure, of the last time you joined me for breakfast here." I slip out of the bedroom carefully, step through to the parlor, and freeze.
"Good morning," Ludwig says from the sofa. "I see congratulations are in order." "Is he ready to go back?"
Roden asks from the sidebar, where he's pouring his own coffee.
"Or will you be taking the day?" "Oh, Cleofer, good gods, give me some credit. I couldn't call myself the Imperial Spymaster and not know when my charges snuck out. Cream, Ludwig?"
"Black, please,"
Ludwig says easily. "Fetch cups for our lords, too, will you?"
"Hearty on it," Roden says fondly, and hands me two large mugs a moment later.
"I'm a little scandalized you didn't know we were here."
"Let him be," Ludwig says, amused, and I retreat.
"Your household," I tell Fitzroy, handing over his mug, "is entirely peopled with gremlins."
"Our household, my dear,"
he corrects archly, and snuggles in against me. The end. Thanks for listening.